You're listening to heritageradionetwork.org. This is a live recording from the Roger Smith Cookbook Conference.
Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palacio, here on Heritage Radio Network, and today I am recording live from the Roger Smith Hotel in New York City, where there is a cookbook conference taking place, and we've got a wonderful array of people in the world of food, cookbook authoring, culinary historians, researchers who use cookbooks, everything and anything to do with cookbooks, and there are a series of fabulous panels. I have with me today Linda Civitello, and Linda is a culinary historian and author of the award-winning book Cuisine and Culture, A History of Food and People. She has lectured on so many different topics, and one of her current studies is the history of baking powder, and I've heard that lecture, Linda. It's wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me and taking time away from the conference.
Thank you. I am so happy to be in New York. I can't tell you.
Yeah, well, Linda comes from California. I'm sure the weather's much, much better out there right now.
They don't have Grand Central Station.
Linda, you have put together a workshop titled Cooking Culture, Recipes, Tales, and Traditions. Tell me what this is about and how you came up with this idea.
Well, I presented at the conference last year, and this year I decided what I really wanted to do was put together my dream panel. And in California, I've gotten used to eating Middle Eastern food. There's a huge Iranian Persian population there. I lead tours around Persian Square, Persian ice cream, Persian bookstores, Persian groceries. A few years ago, when I first moved out to California from New York, I took a look around and I went, it's desert out here. It's kind of Middle Eastern, so I should cook this food. And I started cooking Middle Eastern food and really love it. Fruit stews with, you know, lamb and apricots and wonderful, you know, dates, pomegranates, almonds, pistachios, wonderful, wonderful foods. And then the spices, cumin, coriander, cardamom. And they come in, you know, cardamom comes in black and white and green and things we can't even imagine. And I decided that my panel wanted that, so I invited the cookbook author, whose books I use all the time, Najmiah Batmangli, and she is just magnificent. And her book, all her books are gorgeous, Food of Life, Silk Road Cooking. Silk Road Cooking, A Vegetarian Journey, Healthy New Persian Food, Wine and Persian Food.
And her newest one, I think it was just The Food of Persia?
Several. And then Nowruz about, you know, Iranian New Year.
New Year, Nowruz, right.
Right. And, you know, so that book is just full of splatters. I go to the farmer's market in Santa Monica. I get fresh herbs. What I love about Persian cuisine is that they use herbs in enormous quantities. They use herbs as if they were vegetables. So you'll get a recipe, and these are in Najmiah Batmangli's books, that will call for 4 cups of parsley.
Mm-hmm. Parsley salad, right?
Not a salad, a stew.
Just a stew.
Where, right, parsley, 2 cups of cilantro, dill, you know, a little lamb. Anyway, and then a woman named Pupa Dweck. And Pupa is a nickname, which means kind of doll. Her name is Joyce Dweck, but the book says Pupa Dweck came and spoke at UCLA and about her book, Aromas of Aleppo, about the food of the Syrian Jews. And that's also a beautiful book that is about more than just recipes. It's about the ancient history. It's about diaspora. It's about signature spices in Aleppo cuisine. In this Jewish cuisine of Aleppo, you have tamarind, which is something most Americans are really not familiar with at all. It's sour. You know, it's things are sour and sweet or sour and salty, and Americans are not used to sour in our main courses so much. And the third panelist is Aylin Tan, and she has written a wonderful book about Turkey and regional cuisine from southern Turkey, quite near Aleppo. So you see the connections among, you know, in the spices. And Aleppo, the signature spices are Aleppo pepper, which is a variety of capsicum, hot of chili pepper, which is from the Americas, and allspice, which is also from the Americas, which is ironic because Aleppo was at the center of the spice trade in Western Asia.
And the peppers, I'm familiar with the Aleppo peppers, but I'm surprised about the allspice.
Interesting. Yeah.
Very interesting.
You know.
Well, that's quite a panel you've assembled. So they are going to talk about their cultural traditions and the tales and how this is all tied together, same region. Well, you've got, and I'm sure you're going to go home with some good recipes as well.
Yes. Yeah. It's an honor to meet them. They're just magnificent primary, walking primary sources.
Mm-hmm. When you, you're in your study, in your book, Cuisine and Culture, A History of Food and People, did you do much research in Middle Eastern cuisine at all?
I did. I have not been there, but as I said, I've been to Persian Square. I've talked to people who were born in Persia, in the markets, in California. I know the people who grow the pomegranates, which are enormous, by the way. They're bigger than, they're about the size of grapefruits, maybe. I mean, they're really huge. And growing up here on the East Coast as an Italian-American, we ate pomegranates also, but they were much smaller.
Right.
And there's a huge, thriving Middle Eastern community in Los Angeles. The cuisine of Syria is not in Los Angeles. So meeting Pupa, using recipes from her book and her research, and then Turkish cuisine, I'm lucky enough that there's a Turkish restaurant that just opened around the corner from me in Los Angeles, and they are from Anatolia. So when people, most Americans, you say Turkey, they go Istanbul, and Istanbul is the easternmost European city, and then the rest of Turkey is in Asia. It's the Anatolian plain.
And so as you get entirely different cuisine in those different areas.
Right. You know, it gets rural. You know, it's very remote. And, you know, people forget Troy is in Turkey. You
That's
know,
right.
I mean,
yeah.
It goes back very far.
And which brings me to a point I was going to mention and ask you about, that as culinary historians, I mean, we have to be concerned about hearing these tales and traditions, because these cultures could... I mean, what's happening with, you know, the total unrest, what's happening is often they meld one into another and we lose some of that differentiation of their specific cuisines.
Or the global market. Island has written an award-winning essay about what has happened to poppy cultivation in Turkey because of pressure from the international, from companies.
Yeah.
Right, but this was used as a food. I mean, the seeds, the parts of it, it was not always processed to become the opium poppy, and it's now being replaced by sugar beets, which are not indigenous to the area.
Mm.
You know, so you would have traditions, you would have rituals, you would have, you know, feast days perhaps, or rituals, special meals that you would have the poppy would be connected to, and sugar beet isn't it. That doesn't transfer. It doesn't translate at all. And plus the disruption of life and trying to, one supplanting another. But this happens. I mean, for example, when the New World foods were, the foods from the Western Hemisphere were introduced to the Eastern Hemisphere, one of the things that happened in Turkey was that the pomegranate, a red, acidic liquid, was replaced by the tomato in a lot of the cooking,
and the differences are major. That's surprising.
And other places, tomato did not make inroads. It did not make inroads in Iranian cuisine very much. So, what a country accepts and what it chooses not to accept is also important, and why. And I grew up as an Italian-American with a ferocious sense of identity connected to food. You know, I'd come home from school and would say, oh, look, one of the kids at lunch had this and this. And my mother would go, we don't eat that. We're Italian. We eat this. That's American. We don't eat that. And usually they were right.
Yeah. Well, and so you're going the opposite direction. You're going from American assimilation to back to Middle Eastern roots. So
well, what I'm finding in the Middle Eastern food is because so many Middle Easterners and Arabs conquered Sicily and southern Italy, Naples, where my grandparents were from, I'm seeing the connections to my own cuisine from these unexpected places. For example, rose water, orange blossom water, these used to be used in southern Italian cooking, and there's even a rosolio, which is a liqueur based on roses. A lot of the, pistachios in Sicily. Some of the, I'm finding, noodle dishes that are the same, even in, Syrian cuisine. And you look at ground meat, which was first ground meat shaped into an oval, a kofta, 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 depending on where you are.
Right.
Well, if you change the shape of that slightly, this...
Voila, the meatball.
That's it. You move it a little west, and you've got a meatball.
Well, I mean, you look at what we call there the, the Fertile Crescent or the, the cradle of civilization. I mean, everything stems from there that we know in our cultures.
Yeah, I grew up eating barley. I love barley. Mm-hmm. Most Americans don't know barley at all. But yes, that was one of the grains that came from the Fertile Crescent.
That's right. And I think there is more of a movement back to whole grains and discovering some of these.
Right, but I grew up eating it just as an Italian because it's, it figures in Italian cuisine. And so many of these things do. And, and now, I love lamb. I love, just the cheeses that come from that area. The oven. You had in India, it's a tandoor. In Iran, it's a tanur. In Turkey, it's a tanir. And in Syria, I think it's a tambun. And I hope
so
I got that right.
Very, very little difference. But we've got all these, neighboring cultures sharing so much background.
It's that ceramic oven where you reach down into it and you slap the bread on the side.
Right.
Like you get naan, pita bread, or,
In when you... have all these wonderful three panelists together. What do you expect? Are you expecting to gain anything in particular, any particular knowledge, or any surprises you think might come out of it?
I expect to be surprised because I know the historical record of this. I can tell you about the Persian Empire and that it controlled this region, Alexander the Great and the Roman Empire and the Ottoman Empire, but I know this from secondary sources. I'm Linda Come Lately here. I'm a historian, and they are the primary sources. And, even reading their books, putting flavors together in ways I hadn't thought of. Like I said, tamarind as a sour food
agent,
or allspice and chili peppers and, just lemons, cardamom, anise, just amazing, amazing flavor.
Well, I think it's so interesting that you chose the three of them because these are the cookbooks that you used for your own.
And they're beautiful.
Your own pleasure, exactly.
They're works of art. The cookbooks themselves are works of art.
And that I'm noticing at this cookbook conference, that's how so many of us know one another. It's by their cookbooks and using the cookbooks for research, for not just for cooking, but using the books for finding out about so much more, about culture and about their lives. Mm-hmm. Linda, thank you so much for sharing your time with me. Linda Civitello, and she is a culinary historian from California. And once again, she is the author of, tell me quickly.
Cuisine and Culture, A History of Food and People.
And
the third edition is the best one.
Well, we look forward to hearing more from you through your books. Thank you so much. You've been listening to A Taste of the Past, and I'm Linda Palacio.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, iTunes, and Stitcher for more. Visit our website, heritageradionetwork.org, for all of our 30-plus weekly podcasts. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.